instead of looking at solar as being an addition and perhaps a frivolous amenity, look at it as being an investment in for the long term of our whole energy costs for the city.
How can a city government interested in solar get past a power-hungry utility and a state law that forbids them from buying solar energy from a non-utility company? At least in North Carolina, Raleigh seems to have figured it out. Join us this week as John Farrell talks with Robert Hinson, Renewable Energy Coordinator for the City of Raleigh, about his city's sun-powered future. This is Local Energy Rules, a podcast sharing powerful stories about local renewable energy.
I feel like Raleigh, it, just in terms of a place in the research that we're doing, is just such a great story because you're talking about a place where, you know, the solar resource there is relatively modest. You've got fairly cheap grid electricity, and you have none of those kind of third-party ownership options that are available to so many other cities, like the power purchase agreements and whatnot. So, I was hoping you could tell us how Raleigh has done, you know, kind of a solar leasing arrangement in a state where the only person that can own solar on your roof is the person who owns the rooftop.
Well, let me kind of clarify that for you. We lease the real property. And in other words, we lease the rooftop to the solar developer. We lease the land area to the solar developer. And in turn, the solar developer owns, he actually installs and owns all of the equipment. And that third party investor group, solar developer, then sells the power directly to what is now Duke Energy. So we don't have access to the power, nor do we buy the power. But that there's some changes afoot with our legislature that might change that. Now, one thing I will mention is that as a part of our lease agreement to these third-party solar developers, the city does have the option to purchase the system after 7 years. And after 7 years, in theory, the solar developer will have realized all of their tax credits, depreciation, and those kinds of things, and the city would be able to purchase at a discounted price. Now, in the purchase of the system, the solar developer has already entered into a power purchase agreement with Duke Energy, whereas it sells at a specific rate, and those contracts are for 15 years at a specific rate to Duke. So the city would be, and those power purchase agreements are transferable. So if the city does purchase the system after 7 years, the city would also be able to sell the power to Duke at the agreed upon rate. Those rates are very favorable because early in the stages of these programs, they were more than what is typically being paid right now. So we're hopeful that that model will work for us. But we've got another 2 years before seven rolls around on our first system, which was a small 250 kW system at our water treatment plant. And so we'll investigate that in the coming months, year, to see if it's going to be in the city's best interest to purchase that. Does that kind of clarify how we were able to do that?
Yeah, that's perfectly clear. And it's terrific to hear a story about how you've made this work. So many, I think, cities folks interested in solar in other states have looked for that state policy change that you mentioned that may be coming in North Carolina. And I just am really impressed with how the city was able to forge ahead with a different kind of leasing arrangement rather than leasing the actual solar equipment, leasing out the land of the producer and then having that option to buy after 7 years.
That's correct. That's how we've been able to do it. Now, in addition, we do own some smaller systems. We own a little 53 kW system that was put on a rooftop of an operations facility back in 2009. And really the reason we were doing that, according to Julian, is we wanted to just see what were the issues. And, of course, the city entered into a purchase agreement of its own there, and the city does own that. and we receive the revenue directly. It's basically about $7,300 a year. But it's a small system, but that was one of our first forays into that smaller system.
And is that, just to clarify, is that one, is that system net metered, or is that also a power purchase agreement?
That's a power purchase agreement. Now, we have another facility, which is 75 kW, that is net metered. And that's on a solid waste services facility. And that is net metered, and we, of course, are able to produce somewhere in the neighborhood of about 12% of our power comes from the solar investment there.
You know, between those three things, your city has so much experience with different ways of doing solar. Between this, you know, kind of innovative leasing arrangement where you lease out the land or the rooftop, or the situation where you sign your own power purchase agreement with Duke, or doing a net metering arrangement where you're, of course, producing energy for your own use. Is there any one of those that has really been a better deal for the city, one that you might be more interested in pursuing in the future?
I think we're going to be looking at all three. We obviously don't know how it's going to work on the lease agreement because, you know, in theory, we may be able to acquire at a reduced cost. But that needs to play out. We need to go on another year or so before we actually get that, because it actually is actually based on fair market value. And of course that can be determined in a lot of different ways. I think it really depends too on the size of the system. The city does have some issues. We're not just flush with cash that we're going to be able to say, oh, we're going to put solar on this particular facility and not consider what the upfront cost is. We just can't do that. So I would say that the likelihood of owning any system from the very beginning would be a small system. The net meter begins to make some sense on an operational facility that might take a lot of power. You know, the Solid Waste Services Center has just that takes care of all of our garbage trucks and all our solid waste equipment, which has to be cleaned and has to. So there's a lot of energy cost involved there, and so net metering began to make some sense. We're going to be looking at and trying to evaluate what the return on investment is, because when we first started that, it was not done necessarily because of return investment, but we were looking to get LEED certification on that facility, and we did get platinum LEED certification, and that meant a lot to the city to do that for a solid waste services facility. But I think that the equipment is bought, is paid for, it's going to be producing power for a long time, so we feel like the return on investment, the numbers are going to look better and better as we go out.
You've answered most of this next question I had already about the plans to install more solar and the kind of ownership structure. I'm curious, is there any kind of target that you've set for the amount of solar that you might add, or is it kind of you take it on a case-by-case basis?
It's a case-by-case. We have the opportunity at our wastewater treatment plant where we have the 1.3 megawatt ground mount system to expand. A little bit about that facility, it's undergoing some construction and some changes, and so we didn't want to try to, I guess, take up any property that might in the future be needed. In addition to that particular facility, the city is considering going from an aerobic digestion for wastewater treatment to anaerobic. So there's a play in there potentially for additional solar that would go into that anaerobic product, which can be methane. So there's a lot of things happening that we're in the process of looking at there. At the water treatment plant, we've got another opportunity that we're in the preliminary evaluation phase of right now, and that is that water treatment plant has two terminal reservoirs. Basically, we pull all of our water out of a large lake system, Falls Lake in northern Wake County, northern Raleigh, and we pull that water out of that reservoir into these terminal reservoirs. prior to it being treated and then put in on our distribution lines for the city. There's always been an algae issue with those terminal ponds, and so we're looking now at, and one of the things that causes algae is obviously sunlight. And so we're looking at the possibility of what we call photovoltaics, and that would be voltaic PV panels, probably on pontoons or something that floats, that would shade the water and also have the opportunity to potentially produce power. That right now we're in the preliminary evaluation stages, but if you can go online, you can Google photovoltaics and it will come up. It kind of originated out in California with some of the winery operations that had the same issues. And I believe there's a water treatment plant in New Jersey that has installed some too. So that's another opportunity to review it. We're looking at.
When Matt Grimley from ILSR, our intern on our program, talked to you before, it sounded like a few years ago you had solar developers who were really knocking on your door, maybe coming to sell you on some of the opportunities, but that you haven't had as much kind of outside interest now. Is that true, and why do you think that might be?
Yeah, I think it's true, and it's very simple answer. When the Renewable Energy Portfolio Standard was approved in 2007, I think utilities, Progress Energy of the Carolinas, which has since merged with Duke and is now Duke Energy Progress as our utility, they were trying to determine, just how are they going to meet the Renewable Portfolio Standards. So they had a program called Sunsets that paid fair favorable rates per kW for small and large systems. And with that, it was they were looking for opportunities to place solar. And so that's how we were contacted initially for a water treatment plant, wastewater treatment plant, and then a number of the other investor groups and solar developers were looking for rooftops, and that's where we came. It came about for our Raleigh Convention Center rooftop, which is a 500 kW. But then over the course of 3, 5, 6 years, the industry has grown, the industry has matured, and now, just from a case of it being more of a economy of scale, that the larger installations are the ones that make the most financial sense to the investment community. So that's where, if we're looking at things, some of the larger systems is where we get the most interest right now. Do we have that 8 to 10 acres that we might be able to lease for investment? But as far as the smaller, we probably have to go that alone because the solar developers aren't knocking at our door like they were 4 or 5 years ago.
So one of the things I'm looking to do as part of this podcast series is get a sense of what are the barriers to municipalities in pursuing more solar. Is there one particular thing that was most difficult to overcome? Was there a lot of different things? Maybe you could speak to just one or two of them, if there were a number of them, that you feel like were the things that really stood out and the ones that cities should be most kind of forthright in addressing?
Yeah, we've given that a lot of thought. I think that the biggest thing that is, if you want to call it a barrier, which I think it can be, is just the overall culture of public investment. And by that, what I mean is, especially it relates to solar. I mean, we know that the cost of electricity seems to be increasing here in our state as well as across the country. We see that solar is, the cost of installed solar is decreasing. We see that the solar industry is growing, the rules are changing. We know about the environmental benefits, but there's still an upfront cost. And how we begin to take a look at these projects that we've already done and look at the return on investment and look down the road that each one of these projects are going to have a payback. And say if we build a building, certainly we're going to design that building, and it's going to last 50 years or more. But so instead of looking at solar as being an addition and perhaps a frivolous amenity, look at it as being an investment in for the long term of our whole energy costs for the city. The city's second highest cost for anything is energy. The first is personnel. So, and we're right behind personnel. So it's a huge number. And so if we can look at how these systems can pay for themselves 2-3 times over and go ahead and make the commitment early for the investment, then we'll be getting over that barrier to install more solar.
Do you think, and this I guess leads into my next question, which is, you mentioned before that this notion of third-party ownership, where you could have the solar company actually lease the solar array to the city, or even sell the power directly from that solar array to the city, as is done in a number of other states. Is that the policy change? If you could change one policy, whether it's local or state or federal, that would make doing solar on city buildings easier, or is there something else?
I think that is the one policy change that would make it easier, because the city would not necessarily have to make that upfront investment. We would be able to just purchase the power. So we would be able to take our rooftop and say, Here's our rooftop. Here's our new building. You install the solar. We'll buy it, and we'll sign a contract that obviously should be cheaper than what we would pay for it otherwise. So that would cut out that barrier of that initial one-time investment, and we would be able to realize solar or renewable energy more so. Now, that's not to take away from, I think, the tax credits that are offered by the federal and state governments right now. I think those are very critical to the continued growth and maturation of solar in the country as well as in North Carolina. There's some bills over there with the state right now to look at extending those. Some are looking at just having it extended for residential, small commercial. So anyway, that's going to be played out over the next 8 to 10 months before the end of this calendar year.
Raleigh, in my mind, stands out as a city that has overcome, a lot of adverse conditions, if you will, in terms of making solar work, and has done, frankly, a rather remarkable amount given that. Is there any piece of advice that you would offer to elected officials or staff in other cities that are interested in doing more solar on municipal property?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. I know that down the road, there's going to be more talk about including in our economic analyses what goes on in terms of other long-term benefits of solar as it relates to clean energy, as it relates to air quality, as it might relate to future carbon offsets. Those are things that I think we've got to be aware of that's going on, and we need to look to be able to prepare ourselves to, or at least be knowledgeable of those things that are out there and that are being talked about.
That was John Farrell, ILSR's Director of Democratic Energy, talking to Robert Hinson, the Renewable Energy Coordinator for the City of Raleigh, North Carolina. When this podcast was recorded in April, the North Carolina legislature was debating a bill to allow power purchase agreements to residents in the state. Such a law would allow Raleigh and other cities to begin putting solar on their roofs without any upfront costs, with the benefit of long-term cost savings. You can find out more about power purchase agreements in cities like Raleigh in our new report, Public Rooftop Revolution. That report can be found at ilsr.org. where you'll also find more episodes of our Local Energy Rules podcast. Until next time, keep your energy local, and thanks for listening.